more data behind us.
Recording is on.
You know, we didn't have this a week ago, and but now they're going to have to make up. They're going to, some of them are going to cook up excuses, of course, because they are timid. But this is going to, it's got, there've got to be some people who are going to be emboldened by this information.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it can only help us to see more, you know, reps come out in support of it.
Well, I mean, obviously that's going to help. I mean, there is a snowball effect too. You know, monkey see, monkey do is a real thing when it comes to humans. You know, we're not that much, we're not that further evolved than the monkeys. And it's definitely true that, you know, a group, the larger it gets, the more likely people are to join it. So, you know,
what if we had a bunch of reps all come out at the same time, sort of, or very in sync succession with each other? You know, because then, you know, even they won't be noticed as much, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, is it, you know, and maybe here's another question. So is it polite for a PAC to publicly endorse a candidate for an issue that maybe the candidate himself isn't ready to speak about?
No, I would say that is not polite. I mean, definitely if it is cowardly, then, you know, let them be. We want the people that are ready to put it out, you know, hang out the shingle, be on Front Street, be recognized. You know, if somebody's still too afraid, then, well, they can hang out in the background then.
Cool. All right. And because that's also my, you know, it's not just the movement, it's also, you know, the interpersonal, you know, relationships between, you know, and what the individual candidate wants. And that right now, that's the way we're approaching it. We're withholding any sort of, you know, public listing of candidates who have not already publicly professed. We're letting the candidates themselves lead.
Yeah, and if they don't want to publicly be seen as supporting independence, they certainly shouldn't get any support from the PAC, in my opinion, because, you know, if they're not willing to stand out there before the election, they're definitely not going to do anything afterwards, I don't think. But, you know, I could be wrong.
I feel like this could be a make or break year. I think Matt Sananastasso has suggested we save the CACR 32 attempt for the second year of the session and not do it in 2023. You know,
I thought we weren't even able to do it in 2023.
I guess I don't have the complete details on that then. I guess I'm not completely loop about things.
I don't know about the constitutional amendment, but I know bills, normally you can't repeat the same bill, I don't think. You know, every year you have to change it up. You can do it every, I think once a session, an election cycle, I guess, or something like that. You can do it.
That's right. Once per session, you can put in the same bill. So this is the 2023 will be the first year of the new session. So technically you could put it in 2023, as I understand it, but, you know,
okay. Right. Cause every, since 2 years, so it's strategizing when, which year in those 2 years, and I think that's okay. That makes sense.
This is something I talked about with Elliot last night. Was what's the next step? And so obviously another CACR is an option, but then there's what Max Abramson suggested, which is that state reps can put forward any kind of bill they want to, apparently. So the reps could put forward a bill that just says, we want to put such and such on the ballot. You know, maybe it would be a direct, we should secede thing, or maybe it would be more of a, just a question of, should we move in that direction or whatever, who knows what they would cook up, but we could have that just go through the legislative process, and then it would only require a 50% majority to get through. So that's one thing that I know some of them are probably considering. And then there's Melissa Blazek, apparently.
initially told Elliot there are two sports.
Get some noise in the background.
Yeah, somebody sounds like somebody's at a party or something. Melissa Blasek said that she supports secession and then changed her tune and did not and went against it. But apparently what she said to Alu as well, she would support a study committee on the question. And so I said to him, well, why don't you ask her if she would sponsor it? You know, put her on the spot. All right, you really want a study committee? Well, then put your name on it and let's form the study committee. So those are three different directions that and Alu pointed out we could do all three, you know, in the same year.
Like a state-sponsored study committee?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, study committees are more likely to pass.
Yeah, so that would like to know.
And so maybe a study committee is more appropriate in a year where we don't do a CACR and then bring the CACR back, you know, the following year, I think.
I feel like we need to build up too. So it probably is not a bad idea to do something like not to do everything at once. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Am I thinking about this? But
it's smart because here's the thing: the state does not have a constitutional amendment for secession. So in other words, if you wanted to throw a constitutional amendment for secession, the opposition would ask, well, why do you want to bother putting a constitutional amendment for secession if you were not already desiring to seek independence already? So therefore, a smart, responsible, it just makes sense to have a smart, responsible plan in place because, again, we already have a great quality of life here in New Hampshire. It's very good here in the state. And basically, it's the way I see secession in New Hampshire is almost like a handoff. Like as everything gets worse nearby, we're able to negotiate with, I'm sorry, not nearby, as everything gets worse around the country, I don't think things are gonna get better and it's smart to be prepared. So it's basically we're, you know, just as things seem to be dropping low, we do a handoff and we're able to maintain, you know, the sovereignty and the quality of life here in New Hampshire that we enjoy. That's kind of how I like things to go. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Okay. Just letting it.
We're letting it sink in.
Yeah.
Another approach could be, you know, as far as constitutional amendments are concerned, because there's no prohibition on putting in another constitutional amendment, just keep it the same exact thing. So why not have a proposal to modify the Constitution to simply require a vote every some number of years? So it wouldn't put the vote on the ballot per se immediately. It would just be like every, you know, in the next election, or whatever. I don't know. It could be written in different ways, but just basically just put it on there permanently. Like, all right, well, we're going to put it on there every single election and the people can vote on it every time. That way, every 2 years or every 4 years, I would say at maximum, because we don't want to do it, you know, less often. And then, you know, just constantly be asking the question. And that might be I think that might be different enough. I don't know what the exact rules are on, you know, how different does a thing need to be before it's quote unquote different? Like, you know, if you just change one word of CACR 32, I'm going to guess that's not different enough. But if it sort of the thrust of it changes, maybe that's different enough. For like a, you know, long-term legislator. We got a comment from Robert in the chat. Says he it's too loud at his place. That's probably the earlier. He says on my side for the pack, I just want to ask people what they support, then they join our team. And that might be it looks like Ridley as he joined us. Welcome, Ridley. It's been many months.
Hey, it's also been many minutes trying to get in, but if I finally got in, it does not initially let you in. I guess you have to wait until a little bit after one. It looks like. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey. Well, yeah. Sorry, I've missed so many meetings, but yeah, I don't have much internet. So, thanks for making a phone call option available.
I think since the last time you were here, a political action committee was formed. Were you even aware of that development?
Yeah, I've kept up on it. I have managed to download most of the meetings, and I have been sharing what I've heard with talk radio as usual.
Yeah, Dave. So I got your email, and I don't know if you saw that I responded to you, but we got an address, and I just want to say thank you for the support. Quite honored.
No, I haven't supported you yet, but yeah, I want to send. I want to send a little donation, just symbolically at least. And the other main thing I can do is just make sure people hear about you. I did send an email out to 200 media outlets on my email list. I guess it was yesterday. With the information about the poll and everything. And I called WQUBK about it this morning.
You included the data,
the PDF.
Hey Dave, are you sending out a press release, like in a press release format? Because that's probably the best way.
Well, it was just a glorified link. I just put a nice headline. It says 42% of our poll : 42% of New Hampshireites want independence referendum, and then just put a link to the article with a little bit of a summary.
Okay.
Which article? Because Alu said he was going to be updating his to include the data, but as of last night, the only one that had the actual links to the PDF and the cross tabs and such was the Free Keen or NH Exit one.
Okay, yeah, I linked to whatever the Foundation for New Hampshire Independence had up as it is.
I don't know if it's too late, but you may want to send them directly. Grab the PDF or the web link to Survey USA and just send that straight out. Like, oh, here's an addendum. Here's the actual study, because that's what they're going to want. And unfortunately, the foundation did not link it, at least as of last night.
That seems like a good idea.
Huh.
I mean, study is the valuable thing here, right? I mean,
yeah, we trust the foundation and all, but you got to verify. And so having the actual data is the way to verify their claims. And that is important. So that's why I put that out there.
Yeah.
And you don't want them to have to work at it, because there's not going to be a story otherwise.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to hand this to them on a silver platter. That's why I'm asking about press release, right? Like, as opposed to just even a link, a press release plus data plus link is probably optimal. I mean, obviously we all have.
Where do I find? Where do I find this PDF link thingy?
It's right at the top of the story at Freekeen or NHX that I posted the same story to both websites within the first.
Okay.
Look at the first sentence or two sentences. There's a link that says PDF and web. And one will download a PDF to you, and then the other goes to the SurveyUSA.com website with all the data. Same data, just two different formats.
So, I mean, I don't know what you guys know about like marketing and stuff in companies and how they do it. But often, if you put a press release together, you're basically writing it in the form of an article in a newspaper. But when you do that, there's often outlets like newspapers that will actually print your story, even unedited in many cases. So if somebody does have time to do that and look into that, I think that's a really good idea.
Well, I do have a news list that I have cultivated over the last 15 years. It's limited because it's only an opt-in list. So it's only the people who I've had personal interactions with in the media business who I've asked, hey, you know, would you like to receive an occasional news release from Freekeen? And it's maybe 48 or 50 names, mostly of regional New Hampshire, Boston, and there's like an AP link in, or AP email in there as well, but basically people that operate in this region. And so they've all opted in, and so they're highly likely to open an email from me. I don't hit them very often. I've only done twice this year. The last one was about the hearing the CSCR hearing. So it's been 6 months since my last email. So the good chance some of them are going to open it. But of course, that doesn't mean that we're going to get any kind of coverage out of it. But I tend to get good results with it. Usually I can get one or two bites, but not always. So we'll see. And we may not see anything for a little bit at all. If Ridley's got 200 emails, that's definitely somewhere to shake it out to.
Yeah, that's a good list. I don't know how good the quality is, but just the numbers is it's a good number.
So I like calling the talk radio, of course. That's such a valuable thing that he does on this. How'd it go on WKBK yesterday, Ridley?
Ridley, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I was on mute. It's kind of loud in here. Can you guys hear me?
You're a little hard to hear.
How was your WKB call?
I think we lost him.
Hey, Russell, so like you saw us, saw what we were talking about in the chat. So we went out last night after the order for the program was done at the NHLA Liberty Dinner, and we were able to issue our first checks to multiple candidates, including Mike Sylvia, Diane Kelly, Josh, and then who else? Carla Garrick.
Nice. That must have been a good feeling.
So the money is going to candidates that we know, trust, love, support. So the only thing I don't like is that these candidates, they're not cashing them immediately. So we got to keep track of what we have available so we don't accidentally write too much.
Yeah. How much were you able to give out?
So we gave Mike and Diane 100 each, and actually we did 100 for Mike, Diane, and Carla, and then we did 50 for Josh. And the reason why is because he feels uncertain about his campaign, but he still voted in support of the CACR32. So he can report it as unitemized.
Okay,
and Mike is going to need the help. It sounds like he's got. Yeah. Tristan back now. I went up, I congratulated him last night. I said, you know, if you got Christian Nunu as one of your enemies, you're doing something right.
Right, yes. So we thought that with that press release and then with the release of that the results of the poll, you know, I wanted to wait till the very end of the month, but you know, I thought with the dinner going on, Dennis Pratt's like, Matt, you should give the guys like a ribbit or something at the dinner. I'm like, that's a good idea, but let's just pay these guys. So we're a little bit ahead of the campaign, and we have to reach out to let me think. Russell, were you able to get in touch with who was it? Kristen Jackson. Russell.
I think he said, you know, response in here in a bit.
That's right. But we still got to reach out to a couple of the challengers, but. I got our treasurer working on making it so that way we can set up a BitPay for cryptocurrency donations on the site. I know people have been asking about that, and I feel like Chris has been waiting. Yeah, I know. I appreciate your patience, Chris. What our biggest concern, and perhaps you understand, is that when someone needs wants to donate to the PAC, if they're donating 50 or less, you know, it's an itemized donation. If it's between over $50 and $200, we need their name and their address. And then if it's over $200, it's name, address, and place of business. So we need to make sure that we're able to capture that information on a cryptocurrency donation.
Understood.
Okay. So what's nice is that we got checks out, but I think we have a way for, I think there is, you know, there is much more coming in. It looks like there's definitely a demand to give us funds. that's what I believe. But that being said, we do have enough funds to support the other candidates that we want to donate. Whether it's 100 or 50 or something like that. Since it was the Liberty Dinner, I wanted to go for the nice round check numbers. I know the past couple of weeks I've been quoting averages. And then also there's a few new candidates who we need to reach out to talk to, which would lower the average per candidate, but that would be okay.
Answer to your question, Ian, can you?
We heard the part about answer to your question, then you went off into a bad signal.
Oh, never mind.
I don't know if you're indoors or outdoors, but a step outside might remedy the situation.
I'll try one more time. Getting bad signals, I'll just listen. An answer to your question about WKBK?
Yeah, I hear you now.
The call, I make a lot of calls to WKBK, but this one was interesting because Forrest that called this morning, Forrest was the host, and he went on a long diatribe against it and kept on talking for a long time about it after I was off the line. So his lengthy attack, kept the issue on the table a lot longer than my call. But I think he let me talk for about 5 minutes. With him, so it was pretty good. But yeah, he brought up, he was like, "That's never gonna happen." And when it does, it's gonna be awful. Because how would we get our electricity?
So he's admitting it's inevitable then, right? It sounds like
it wasn't exactly what he said, but that's how they go through it. First, it's never going to happen, and then I'm terrified it's going to happen.
they're gonna spin it. They're gonna spin it the way they want to spin it, and we can spin what they say the way we want to spin it.
But I like Forrest, though. He will let you talk about anything, and he doesn't shut you off or shout you down or anything like that. So he's going through the normal process that a lot of people are going through, and over time this will just become normalized. Right now it's still an alien idea to a lot of people.
Well, for anybody that hasn't read the study or looked over any of the summaries on it, one of the most important takeaways has to be the fact that no matter what state was asked, and there were 8 states that were surveyed, there wasn't a single state where more than, I think, 10% supported a military intervention. The average was 6% across all 8 states as far as if blank state is to leave the Union, what should the U.S. federal government do in response? And it was an average of 6% of respondents said, use the military to stop them. So that is not a popular option. The Fed will lose what little shred of legitimacy they have left if they decide to employ that option with the people of the country. They would not support it. So I thought that was pretty interesting. With the majority saying, I think it was 57% said, just leave them, let them go. And then there was 38% that said that economic sanctions could be utilized. So as far as what the public is willing to support, that's about it. They don't support the military intervention, and that's the bit one of the biggest objections we face.
That, you know, if it's super unpopular, I wonder if you could get some of the opposition, you know, the reps to state that they would support military intervention against New Hampshire.
That's actually an idea that Representative San Anastasio has pitched. We try and do that as a vote as well. We do that as a separate vote. I think that's a really good idea. That and the study group. And if 30% of the country, you know, would support economic sanctions, then we just got to make sure that we have a really beefed up economic plan that would withstand what kinds of sanctions. We could look at a history of, you know, the kinds of economic sanctions that the U.S. government likes to employ, whether it's domestic or even you know, what tactics that the government uses already against the states, which would then it would translate into sanctions against New Hampshire. I think if we're serious about this, we need to have a really good, you know, okay, so if, okay, the federal government wants to do a, you know, economic sanction supported by 30% of the country, how are we going to respond to that? And if we can't think of a good plan in response, right, the government could get away with 30% support if we're going to take 30% support and, you know, and run with independence, right? If we can't think of a good plan that could, like, be robust to survive that, I almost don't know if secession would even be possible, because then we're not doing our homework.
Can you clarify a little bit about what the first thing was that Matt was proposing? Would that be just a resolution of the state reps that they support military intervention? I'm not really clear.
Nope. It would be like a resolution that it would be wrong for the federal government to use military force against any state that wishes to peacefully and constitutionally, you know, legally, lawfully secede. Something along those lines.
Okay, got it.
I think if we're gonna do this in building blocks and steps to earn credibility, I think that's definitely got to be, you know, in the works. Now, and that vote could probably happen next year, easy, and then along with the study group, and then try and go for the amendment in the second year.
That's all the arch statists in an awkward position and makes them vote on that position.
I think that's a fantastic idea in order to generate support for, you know, our side.
Do you guys like that strategy?
Yeah, let's.
Okay, thanks, guys. Thank you. You know, at Pork Fest, I made a stop at one of the Moms for Liberty events because I wanted to make a point that secession won't be happening without the express consent of Granite State mothers and Granite State fathers. So... you know, people might think that we're fools at first, but it's good to be prepared. I'm an Eagle Scout. It's okay. It's okay if we're not popular right now. But turns out we are 52% of Republican support.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I think we got something. We just gotta. Nation building, what do you know? Whoa! We should just borrow one of the plans that the U.S. military would do for, like, building up Iraq and just, like, almost like, okay, well, you know, have that as like a blueprint, because our country's Americans have been practicing nation building for the past 20 years. We should have no problem building a nation here.
I'm curious, how does the CAA do it when they take over our country? Like, I mean, what do they, you know, how do they build support for the takeover? I mean, this isn't a takeover like in a military sense, but they still have strategies and plans and things.
Well, the way that they would do it is, and it's not like a secret, it's, you know, psychological operations. It's control over the media, that sort of thing. If you control what's in the minds of the people, you know, you can control the media. So when we talk about, you know, the liberal media, it's really more international media. It's not, it's international in focus. It's the news according to globalism. It's the news according to international finance and how it relates. So when, you know, the CIA wants to do, you know, color revolution, it's, you know, who's, you know, there's so many people on who are involved in the mass media who are also like former, you know, intelligence analysts or have also been involved in Hollywood. You know, CIA has got an office in Hollywood. So that we have the movie Top Gun that just came out. And whenever the U.S. government is asked to provide military equipment in the movie, the script of the movie needs to be approved by the American government. So they're always because in this context, the government is acting as a private entity along with the, you know, the movie industry, right? Okay, you want our equipment? Okay, this is what the script's going to be. We need to be approving of it in order to, you know, in order for you to use our gear for the otherwise no movie. So that's kind of how. Do you like that? Do you like that response, Chris? Do you like that? Feel satisfied?
Yeah, I mean, I get where you're going with it. Trying to think like how we can, you know, use. I mean, if I know the CIA is not always effective, but what tactics can we learn from? I guess is what I'm trying to figure out. That might be useful, or we might be able to use. I mean, obviously, just because they use something doesn't mean we can use it. But
I think we're stuck within the confines of the laws that we have. That's kind of what I think.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting breaking any laws. I didn't assume that the CIA only uses illegal methods. I thought they did things like, I don't know, you know, get articles, pay for articles to be printed in newspapers and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's maybe I don't have all the answers. You know, I'm happy to brainstorm. I think I'm a pretty creative person. I used to write my own music. I used to, you know, perform on stage, but I gave that all up a few years ago because there were other things to worry about. So what did I read? I read a great book about how during World War II, America basically kind of, we stabbed Britain in the back from behind, and that's why we weren't able to, that's why there's no British Empire anymore today. And at the final chapter of the book, the remaining few chapters of the book, the author was talking about how the CIA uses like airlines, use public airlines, and these create these corporations so that way they can drive people into different countries. That's way beyond what your question might not have an answer. Yeah, that's a good question, Chris. I don't know if this audience here has an answer for that, though.
Well, I think we can take some cues from the Liberty Alliance, which has been around now almost for 20 years. They announced their meeting last night. Next year will be their 20th anniversary. They've managed to do an amazing job and create an event that I said to Bonnie last night. It's like, I don't know why they keep having these outsider speakers come in. It's like they wouldn't have a problem filling that that room if it was, you know, a state rep that was the speaker instead of some guy who doesn't have any interest in moving to New Hampshire whatsoever. Anyway, it's a very popular event. They would sell it out, and so they've done something right. They've curried relationships with the state reps, and if I recall correctly, I think they have a yearly sort of, I don't know if they call it what they call it, like a summit or something, where they have their Liberty reps and just average folk kind of come together, I've actually never attended one of them, so I don't know exactly what the format is like, but, you know, it happens at a restaurant with a big meeting hall or whatever, and people could just talk to the reps, and the reps talk to each other, and I think, you know, having the nine reps, and maybe with the four that aren't running again, the 13 of them come together for brainstorming, because we've got some good ideas sitting here, but I think it'd be good to facilitate somehow the 13, for lack of a better term, to come together, and any others like Carla, et cetera, who are seeking office, to facilitate what the next steps are from their perspective. So that would be something, if y'all wanted to put together, figure out the venue and time and invite everybody. And it probably should be well in advance of the deadline for filing the legislation, which I believe is a different deadline on election year, but I'm not 100% on when that is. Because I know normal years, it's like you got to get it in September, I think, or the end of August or something. I think it gets pushed back on 11 years.
So you're talking about some sort of dinner where people come and you invite the 13 reps to come and talk, that kind of thing?
Yeah, like I said, I've never attended one. I bet Matt, I bet we could ask Matt Santanastasso. I bet he's been to one. But Liberty Alliance puts one of these things on every year, and it's not the thing we went to last night. It's more, last night was just an awards dinner. This, I don't think, would be like, I don't think it's like the same format of you get a banquet dinner kind of plate thing. I think it's just more of like an open social restaurant. But there may be a scheduled discussion. Like I said, I've never attended it, but it's sort of marketed as, come meet the state reps, and the state reps get to, press the flesh with one another and exchange ideas in a format that just has Liberty people around. So I think there's some value to that. For what we're doing, just basically the suggestion is, let's emulate the Liberty Alliance to some extent, because they've had they've sort of beat a path, if you will. And wouldn't it be nice if eventually, and not right away, obviously, but if eventually the New Hampshire Independence Pack was doing its own award, at some point 5 years.
That would be nice. See how big we can get, see how involved we can get. I just know right now we're working on maybe some t-shirts and a crypto donation and getting checks to our first candidates, and we have our first filing. We have our first filing a month from today, so we just got to make sure all of our paperwork is crisp and everything's ready. And I'll make sure to follow up after that's been submitted, just to make sure everything is the standard. But okay, I did have a question for you, Ian, too. Nexit.us. Obviously, you guys, were a sponsor of last night's dinner. How do you guys advertise, or do you guys advertise beyond, the website itself and sponsorships?
That's the only sponsorship that NAX has ever purchased at this point.
Okay, got it. Okay. Just curious, if there was already advertising happening, and we could piggyback on whatever outlets that you're using. So,
Russell Canning is, I think, trying to join, but I haven't heard him say anything yet. So I'm assuming he was not able to get through. He was trying to join from a Panera Bread or something.
He says, Russell says, I'm here, but that's in the chat.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, I think you must have mentioned that at the beginning. I didn't.
Yeah, he's just noisy, he's saying.
I also see we got Daniel Miller listening in.
Hey! Daniel Miller is the most interesting politician in America. You can tell him that if he's listening.
Is that code for crazy? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I've been talking about you quite a bit, Daniel, and yeah, your podcast is just fantastic. I listen to it all the time.
Well, I appreciate that. Look, I didn't come in here to bust up the meeting. I just came in to show support, fellas.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I should probably attend some of yours.
Well, I apologize. I disconnected during what I was saying there. What I'd like to hear from you, Daniel, if you don't mind, is what y'all took away from that. You know, what were some of the highlights for you from the poll down in Texas? And how are you guys propagating that out there, getting the word out about it, if you don't mind?
Yeah, not a problem at all. Let me do this. You guys are going to walk with me because that requires another cup of coffee. So we're going to the coffee pot, y'all. Yeah, I know, right? This is what we call a working meeting. Here's the, interestingly enough, and this is going to have some setup, so guys, just bear with me. If it sounds like a filibuster, I swear it's not. It just needs proper context. You know, polling on this issue over here has always been problematic, okay? You go back to, for us, probably after we founded the TNM, the first kind of bombshell poll was one that was done by Research 2000. And, of course, it was commissioned by, a progressive organization and website. And what they did was the methodology for the polling split the respondent panel a third, a third, and a third, right? Republican, independent, Democrat, which of course cuts a bunch of people out of the equation, right? Cuts out libertarians, anybody who votes third party and is committed to that will neither identify as Republican, independent, or Democrat. It also does not take into account those people that have been disenfranchised by the existing political system and just won't bother to vote for a political party, but would vote particularly for our issue. So we were able to get the crosstabs and break that down, take those crosstabs and overlay the responses across the way that people actually vote here in Texas. And so, we were able to take the data and mine that out. And then you had the 2014 Reuters Ipsos poll, which instead of polling state by state, like the Survey USA poll or that poll during Brexit that was commissioned by Leave.eu, they had instead of having a large sample size that was geographically siloed, they spread it out and said, would you like your state to leave? And they reported the results by region. So they reported it instead of state by state. They did it Southwest, Northeast, Pacific. They did it that way. And so, we found the oddities in how they reported the numbers. So again, we had to take the crosstabs, extract the Texas data out, and break it down by a political party. And I keep saying that because that's super important for those polls, typically reverse engineering these ridiculous polls that the opposition does. But the Survey USA poll is a bit different because it asks a very pointed question. And the takeaways from this, for us is we were looking primarily not at party affiliation because at this point, we're sort of past that. I mean, it's useful for us. But what we were looking at is the non-voters versus presidential election only versus every election, right? So those are the people that you're going to gauge that have sort of that will turn out for this sort of thing. And generally, the average for independence referenda is about globally last 75 years, about 85% for voter turnout. So, we already know we're going to have a high burden, but we wanted to track that particular number. And so the secret for utilization of these polls is to mine out the really good information. And I already heard you guys doing that, right? I mean, you could look at it and go, well, we're underwater right now, but you're not underwater by much. And that takes into account the entire panel size, right? You rightfully latched onto the the percentage of support inside the political party. And the other thing to bear in mind is, not if you're underwater like we were back in 2009, then the other thing you want to track is you want to track what the opposition percentage is, right? Because you've got this big panel of this big body of undecideds, and understand the ultimate takeaway here, and the thing you got to remember is this is really about running a political campaign. So if I'm on 45% and the opposition is on, you know, and I don't have your poll numbers right in front of me, so somebody enlighten me. What was the opposed percentage?
Well, 47% getting on the ballot. 42% were in favor of putting it on the ballot.
Okay, what was that first number you broke up?
47%
were completely opposed. Breaking up, I'm sorry.
7% opposed to putting it on the ballot, 42% in favor.
And that's fine. That's at least something to work at. But understand that right now, you know, with the percentages that you've got, and particularly a majority in one of the major political parties, you are at a point where, when we founded in 2005, we would have loved to have been. I mean, when we launched the TNM, we were pulling in single digits. Okay, so you guys are starting ahead of the starting line. So the thing to determine is how to develop the strategies related to the three. Okay, so whether the supporters, the undecideds, and the opposed, and for those supporters. Think of it like a campaign. Right now, you know that across all voters, if it's 42%, that is a major number. I mean, that is a majorly significant number. And you know that the bulk of those people are Republican voters. So your task, just as it is in any campaign, is to be able to identify those people, communicate with them, and organize them, get them into the sort of the body of the movement, and help them and get them to help you reach the rest of your convinced, right? It's what we tell our volunteers all the time. At this juncture, our job is not to convince anyone. It's to find the convinced. And that's what you have to do. This all goes back to, and it was interesting hearing Matt talk about the nation building and sort of what the way that these regimes get toppled. And it just made me think of Gene Sharp and what, you know, some of the things that Gene Sharp wrote about that sort of thing, and understanding that if it truly is a people movement, then you have to connect with and communicate with and organize as many people as possible. So all of that was the long setup to basically say this, you know, for us, you know, we're at this point in the process where it's about dispelling the opposition myth that no one supports this, right? We know and have known for some time, if this goes to a vote of the people, it wins. And it doesn't win by a little, and it wins by a lot. You know, you guys, if you saw me at any of the events up there, you heard me say that a lot. But that's the case. And regardless of what the poll numbers show, the reason that independence wins is we can always make the case why our states should be self-governing independent nations, but the opposition cannot make the case as to why we should stay. They mine out of that Project Fear playbook where it's all like, you know, we're going to be invaded. Well, that's funny because, you know, less than 10% of people across the state say that that's even an option. Well, they'll economically sanction us. Well, that's interesting because, you know, you guys have got roughly, you know, with margin of error, about a third of the people who say they would support that crap. But that's all well and good until the rest of the world decides to sanction the U.S. because what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? So, you know, the idea that they have any kind of positive case for why our states should remain in the union is just absolutely laughable. It's always fear and all this other ridiculous nonsense. But we've always got the case. You know, you guys have the case. We have the case. Pretty much any state has the case that they can make. And it's that simple question about you know, knowing everything you know about the federal government today, would you vote to join the union? And if you wouldn't vote to join, then why would you vote to stay? Right. Everything else is sort of, you know, there's details, and you can answer every question. You can answer 1,000 questions, but that is the question that you have to put to voters to get them to understand that this is not going to get any better in the relationship with the federal system, which I thought that was a great number that came out of that poll for you guys regarding the lack of trust among the federal government. But, you know, those results are about building that social proof, right, to go out, because these people have been told all their lives that it's not possible, it can't happen, it's, you know, your state just can't, just unlike the, you know, 200 other self-governing independent nations around the world can't make it, and they try to atomize. And so anything you can do with those poll numbers, whatever good news you can mine out of that to share with people to build their confidence that they are not alone in their support for this is huge. And whether that's events, whether it's meetings, whether, I mean, anything you can do with those numbers, it makes it a huge benefit and puts you way ahead of where we were in November of 2005.
Daniel, I have been calling Talk Radio some, or at least Free Talk Live, to update them on the voter fraud concerns that you guys have, and other stuff that happens to you. But do you have someone of your own that's calling Free Talk Live?
Not Free Talk Live specifically. Is that something you'd recommend?
That's the most important talk show to call in America, probably, because you can change the subject, and they have 200,000 listeners. Now, there are a couple others that are bigger, but they're hard to get on the air and so forth. My experience is that, like, that's super important to call Free Talk Live. I've never heard any of your people call in there, and that would be a good resource for you.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Thank you for that. I will say this, that we don't have that in Texas. We do have some. I shouldn't talk down. We do have one in Dallas, but there are overnights. And then another one in Texarkana, but I don't know if we have more than that. But anyway, there's a few people listening.
Well, look, we'll give it a try. You guys know, just like we do, that it's all about connecting with people. You know, what is the average? I think the average is 7 touches with a voter to be able to actually break through to them, you know? And so, you know, this idea that, you know, it's kind of an all of the above communication strategy. You know, we've got, I mean, even down to old school letters to the editor. I mean, just anything and everything you can to continue to elevate. I mean, one of the key activities that we have our volunteers do in the field, particularly when we have new leadership or spinning up a new group, is flag waves. I mean, just go down on the corner of somewhere with a clipboard and a bunch of people with flags, and you would be surprised. I mean, it's, you know, but just building that awareness, whether it's banners, whatever it is, even, you know, 3 to 6 people can make a huge difference in a community and reach out and touch a ton of voters. And you'll be surprised. You'll get people that pull up and say, "Hey, I've been looking for y'all my entire life." And of course, you know, for guys like y'all and the guys like us that have been at this a long time, it's like, yeah, we've been looking for you too. Where were you? Did you not see our billboards or us on TV or, you know, any of the other 5,000 things we've done? So, but you know, it's, again, it's just about making those connections.
That sounds like a good idea. And by flag waves, you mean the Texas or New Hampshire flag, just to be clear, right?
Yeah. I mean, and again, you know, this is one of the things that we talked about, I guess, when I was up there last, was, you know, this one of the, I can't remember who, I think it was during the Q&A, someone was talking about the flag, the symbol, things of that nature. And that really is a key component of nation building. I don't know who brought that up earlier, but it's valid. I mean, it's a valid way to look at it. We actually have a training series called the Nation Builder Series because, you know, that's what they do after, you know, they go after a government gets toppled and they try to create a nation, right? A quote unquote nation or some geopolitical entity is they have a certain playbook. You know, they get them a flag and they get them an anthem and then, you know, all these symbols of you know, their whatever that new entity is. And while they do that for negative reasons, it's important for us to do it for positive reasons. I mean, we can't forget that our relationship with the federal system has done everything, the federal system has done everything it can because of that relationship to subsume who we are as individual entities, right? It's how they, it's part of their mechanism of control and convincing people that it can't happen. And so it's important for us as independence organizations that, that are out there pursuing this, is to do everything we can to pour gas on the independence fire. And if that means a flag, look, if your state flag doesn't cut the mustard, if you don't think it'll do the trick, get your own, you know, that, that is uniquely for the independence movement. That's what we wound up doing.
We actually have that. There's a gentleman, Patrick Bender, who created something called the Granite Republic.
That he was one at the Q&A. That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, he's got a whole logo. I think he's coming out with a – he's got a bunch of hats that he's printed up, and he's been selling in T-shirts, and he's got bags. So it's pretty cool, man. I love it when that stuff just happens.
Right, right. Well, guys, I didn't mean to filibuster, and I didn't mean to bust up the party. I just wanted to come tell you guys congratulations, man. We're watching what you're doing. We're super proud, and we're just so happy to have a relationship with you guys. And you know, a rising tide raises all boats, and I think we can all win this thing.
Thank you. You got great information.
Hey, no problem at all. I'm gonna put myself back on. I'm going to put my – go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you also for mentioning my my call to WBAP 3 months ago. But, yeah, I had called WBAP, I guess, Mark Davis' show, and he had condemned me. You publicized that on your podcast. I appreciate that.
Hey, no worries.
You're insider. Are you outside, Dave? Because that might help you with the calls in the house.
Hey, anybody else think Alu needs to lower his camera because he's looking a lot like Gilroy?
Is that Daniel Miller is still alive?
That's your favorite. Hey, just barely.
Okay. How low did you want it?
Whoa. It's a family show.
You've said lower. And
I said you look like Gilroy. I mean, I
don't know who that is, but I'm glad you're alive because I feel like you haven't answered anything in like a month.
Well, it's been a little busy over here. I don't know if you've been aware.
Nope. I was going to send a searching party rescue for you.
Well, check your milk cartons. There may be a picture of me on there. Okay.
So, yeah, we have a lot to catch up on. So what's going on in Texas and what's going on with everyone else with MS?
You just missed Daniel talking for about 10 minutes.
What's up, Alu? Did you get Ian's request to add a link to the Foundation for New Hampshire Independent article on the poll? I think Ian is wanting to see some kind of more source data.
Yeah, I gave him
on your main link.
Yeah, and I put it.
Okay, it's already been added to the existing link.
I added it to the Liberty Block article. I'll add it to the FNHI right now.
Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah, because I sent the FNHI article out to a bunch of media outlets, and apparently it didn't have what it needed at the time that I sent it.
Okay, it does now. So if you refresh the page, it's there, linked.
Okay, good. Thanks.
What else did I miss?
About an hour worth.
You gotta do it all again.
If any of you guys don't have NH Exit bumper stickers, please let me know and I'll send you one to put on your car. We need to get the word out, I think, more too. I'm going to try and hand out some more bumper stickers, at some events, maybe hopefully today even.
Can we do magnets? I like magnets.
Magnets? Like car magnets? Like bumper sticker car magnets?
Yep.
Does it cost a lot more?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know. That adds weight. Like if you're going to try and hand them out, I mean, it's a good idea, but
okay.
I'm going to pursue that.
Do we know all the candidates are rep for re-election and new candidates who support independents, and who needs the most help in the primary.
All right.
I want to help more.
All right. So would you be able to email me, Alu, the if you have it, the contact information for Tom Mannion and Julie Smith that you mentioned the other day? And then we thought, Derek and I thought we'd see you at the event last night, but we're looking to pay you back for sponsoring the business cards at first, but we were able to give checks out to we got Glenn, Diane, and Carla, and Josh. You know, we got them what they needed, and then I think the biggest things are the other guys in Belknap. So we got to reach out to them this week because you know it's the last week of July. So, and then we're still working on
the primary is September 8th.
I thought it was the 13th.
It's September, right?